Welcome back to the gospel. It is midweek, so it is time for a rewind. We want to break down what happened, what's about to happen, all that kind of good stuff. I'm your Jose, the fantasy football fiend, and I have my guy, BK Wins, rolling with me. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, everyone. Love that we're doing this. Going to be another fun show.
Absolutely. So, a few things went down in the NFL. A few things went down in, well, will be going down in college this coming weekend. We're going to talk about that just a little bit before we get rolling. Remember, you can follow us on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's at The Gospel STP. The fantasy, the Facebook group, The Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. Right now, we're in the midst of fantasy playoffs, so there may be a few hard questions that you have to ask yourself. Don't put the load all on you. We can help you out. Post your questions. Make sure you listen to the fantasy show that'll be coming out on tomorrow. But let's hop right into the rewind. Are the 49ers done? They lost to the Rams 12-6. This was like horrible weather. The rain was kind of just pouring down. But that is the type of a game you would think would kind of cater itself to the strength of the 49ers a little bit more. I just, it feels like it's one of those years that is just kind of biting them in the butt. Based on their ability to draft, though, this could actually end up being a blessing in disguise or a silver lining in a dark cloud for them, because I don't see them this year, even if they were a little healthier, beating the likes of Kansas City, maybe not even the Buffalo Bills at this point. They're doing their thing. But there are a few teams out there that I just don't think they would have been able to get over the hurdle with. But what's going on with the 49ers, and do you think they're done for this year?
I think they're in big trouble this year. The injuries have just decimated this team. All year, Vander and I have talked about that the Niners, from a talent perspective, were the team to beat. But the injuries have just killed them on both sides of the ball. And the other part of it is, you know, I'm still not sold on Brock Purdy as quarterback. You know, he's more of a game manager than a guy that's going to win the game for you. And when you start seeing guys like Josh Allen and Burrow and Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and those kind of quarterbacks of that ilk, it's going to be really hard to beat those teams when your quarterback isn't a strength of your team. But the other part for the Niners is, to your point, they were at home. They were playing in a quagmire, you know, and so you would think that the sloppy conditions would favor their defensive loaded team. And it did, in the fact that they held a Rams team that scored 44 the game before to 12. So clearly the defense showed up. You give up 12 points in the NFL, you should win every time. But their offense was just abysmal. And the injuries are a part of it. But, you know, sometimes I try not to say these kind of things, but I think it applies. Some years in pro sports, it's just not your year. And I just think for the Niners, this is just one of those things where nothing's gone right, and they're going to be moving ahead to 2025.
I completely concur with you. And at this point, with what's going on with CMC, Brandon Ayuk out, Ricky Parcells, his health issue / attack on him that went down, the backup to the backup running back, like it's just a lot going on. Your left tackle, who basically keeps your quarterback upright and breathing, Brock Purdy hasn't been looking like himself because he doesn't have Trent Williams out there. That guy's a difference maker. So, like, there's a lot going on with the 49ers right now, but I just don't think it's their year, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. On the other end of the spectrum, Tampa Bay beat up on the Chargers 40-17. Can they be the real deal, or is this just for now? And when we get to the playoffs, that a carriage will turn back into a pumpkin?
Well, a couple things. I took a play out of your playbook, actually, and teased a couple of these extra games. I took the Eagles. I moved that to the money line against the Steelers. And, of course, I took the Bucs +9 over the Chargers, and that wasn't even needed the way they dominated that game. But I was more surprised about how bad the Chargers looked. To get blown out at home in a really important game to them that brought them behind Denver now, so they're now seventh in the playoff race at 8-6. So that was a big loss at home. They got the big showdown Thursday night against Denver at home. So that's a big game for both those teams. But the Bucs, we've talked about this. Baker Mayfield has been playing great. He's been this year what Cousins hasn't been. Whereas the season's gone on, Mayfield played better and better. They were able to tread water when Godwin and Evans were injured. And now they look to the team to beat. They're 8-6. They're a game up on Atlanta. The Saints and the Panthers are obviously out. So, you know, it's a two-team race for the NFC South, but the Bucs have looked really strong. That was a really impressive performance, especially on the road.
Yeah, and you mentioned them, so let's go ahead here next. Our breaking news today, Kirk Cousins will no longer be the starting quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know if this is a one-week thing or going-forward thing or what, but they just paid him a boatload of money to now not be the quarterback. They're one game behind Tampa Bay, which means they're right in the thick of it. So this isn't a play for next year. This is basically them saying, we don't think, even though we figured it out against the Raiders in the 15-9 win, we don't think that you have command enough of this offense to continue to be at the helm. What do you think about this decision from Atlanta, first of all? Is this them being brave and doing what needs to be done? Or is this a knee-jerk reaction and now they are completely messing everything up and what could have been a nice thing for this year, for this franchise, is now going to end up being a whole bunch of stuff thrown up against the wall and they're hoping that something works?
For me, I think it's a panic move. You know, you have a team that struggled the last month. Cousins has been really bad the last 5-6 weeks. So I guess from an aspect of his performance warrants this kind of thought process, but you're 7-7 with 3 games to go. You're a game out of first place. You still have a chance to win the division and make the playoffs.
Yep.
You're really putting in a rookie quarterback coming off of an injury to try to play meaningful football down the stretch in must-win situations. There's always a period of time, a learning curve with these quarterbacks. I just don't think he's able to throw into the fire and be good from the word go. I think this move makes sense to start next season. I just really shake my head, and I got to tell you, I wouldn't have made this move. But to be honest, I don't think it matters because I think the ship is already sunk. The Bucs are going to win that division. They're the team to beat.
I agree with everything you just said. Most people attempt to do the exact opposite of what Atlanta just did. Like, you brought in a veteran to bring the rookie along so that they wouldn't have to necessarily go through the bumps and bruises, if you will, when not prepared. But what you're choosing to do is put the rookie in when you have to win all your games or not make the playoffs. That's when you thought it was prudent to put in the guy that's never played an NFL game before. Like, this is weird. Like, this is different. I don't believe I've seen this happen before, unless it was due to injury or something of that nature. But just to, like, you're not a losing team right now. You're one game out of first place and you're literally at 500. So you are literally not a losing team. And this is left field to me. I don't understand. Like, maybe it's a you've lost the locker room sort of a thing and they're seeing something in practice. But again, that's practice. That's like, I don't know. Can you go back to Kirk Cousins if he has a bad game this week and they lose?
Like, you know, when you make a move like this, it's for the season. There's no going back. You don't do this without riding it out. And the thing that's weird to me is I guess the only counter argument logic that I can think of is, given how Cousins have performed the last 4 to 6 weeks, it can't get any worse than how he's played. But still, like,
hey, what you want? They won yesterday. On Sunday. Monday.
Yeah, you're paying all this money for a quarterback that you knew was coming off an injury, who has a history of underperforming in big games, you build a roster in the offseason to win the division and make a move because you sense the opportunity. Cousins does what he always does. He shrivels up when it really matters. And so nothing has really changed from the narrative we've seen. And now you're making the move. My question is if he's been playing bad for 6 weeks or 4 weeks or however long it's been, more than a month, why are we waiting until now?
Agreed. There's one coach who's probably not on the hot seat anymore, and that's one Mr. McDermott out there in Buffalo. Buffalo beat the Lions 48-42. Now, the Lions have 16 defensive players at this time that are currently injured. Twofold questions. Question here. Are the Lions a little too beat up to do what we kind of thought they could have done this season based on everything that they had talent-wise on the team? And right now, Buffalo is swinging and hitting everyone that comes in their direction. And it feels almost as if they're better than they were this time last year when they had the number one wide receiver being one Mr. Diggs. They did trade for Amari Cooper. Shakur, he's stepping up. And Mac Hollins is able to do a couple of things here and there. But honestly, I don't know that Allen isn't the MVP right now. Because who saw this coming? They're right in the thick of it. And this actually surprised me. I'll be the first one to say. I thought they would take a step back on offense. I don't know that they don't have the same average number of points that they had last year. So, yeah, they seem to be able to beat tough teams regularly. Teams that everyone thinks are some of the best teams they seem to be able to beat in the regular season. But that's neither here nor there. What are your thoughts on the Bills and the Lions going forward? And what was your thought on that particular game?
Well, first I was annoyed because it was the only bet I lost all week. So you know, you know how happy I was about that. But what I will say is the Lions have been dying to lose. They were on a long winning streak, and injuries have killed them. And look, give Buffalo credit. Sometimes it's not about Detroit. They scored 42 points. That's going to win most games 90% of the time. In fact, this is the first time in NFL history a quarterback's thrown for over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns in a losing effort. So, you know, Goff had a historically great game, and it still wasn't enough. Give Josh Allen credit. He should and will be the league's MVP. I don't know of anyone who's going to be taking it from him. He's been terrific. As far as the coaching part goes with McDermott, look, it's easy to win in the regular season when you wrapped up the division 3 weeks ago and there's no pressure, and you're really not going to win home field. So it feels like, you know, they can kind of work their way through the regular season. The one thing I will say, though, is, and I know this wasn't your question, but, you know, I'm good at kind of going off on a tangent here and tying things together. I think the Steelers are definitely getting exposed for the limitations they are on offense. It's kind of like what I've been saying. Great defense, great special teams, pedestrian offense. And we've seen that pretty much week after week, other than against the Bengals, who literally play a cover zero. They don't cover anybody. So, but what I'm curious now is, with the injury to Mahomes in his ankle and the division wrapped up, now granted, they still got to win another game or two, probably two, to secure home field, because they're up 2 with 3 to go on Buffalo, and Buffalo has the breaker. So can Kansas City hold on without Mahomes likely for the rest of the regular season? Because that is going to be an issue.
Well, I just saw something today that said Mahomes practiced in full today. He's not going to allow it to be an issue. It's basically what's going on right now.
But here's my question, buddy, with that real quick. So it's one thing to be a full participant. It's another thing to want to play, right? He's already an all-time great. I understand he's competitive. I understand how great he is. but he's got a high ankle sprain. And we know what the usual recovery is for an injury like that. So for you to come back less than a week after high ankle sprain, I guess in my mind is, it's great that he's going to try to play, and I'm sure he's going to play. The question is how well will he play? Can he protect himself? And what if it gets injured worse? Because there's a real possibility that he's going to do more damage playing this week versus sitting out one game, especially knowing you have a two-game lead.
I hear you. But he didn't get where he is by saying, if I can go, I'm not going to go, and I'm going to just kind of make sure that I'm holding serve, if you will. We saw with Trevor Lawrence last year, who actually had a high ankle sprain. This was labeled as kind of like a mild high ankle sprain. He had a, I guess, regular high ankle sprain, if you will, and he came back the next week. They don't really have to do a lot of the things that a wide receiver, running back, they aren't run first quarterbacks anyway. So an ankle sprain wouldn't hurt them quite as much as it would hurt other positions. I do see your point. I just don't know that Mahomes cares. Is how I would put that.
The game I remember, let's harken back to the Super Bowl, where the Buccaneers with Brady literally blitzed them off the bus. Remember when he had that bad ankle? And Mahomes spent that entire game running for his life. And that's kind of how I envision life's going to be like for him moving forward, because all it takes is a lineman to roll up on him or someone to hit him low or, you know, anything like that. And again, I understand why he's playing and I can't blame him or fault him for it. He's a winner. Winners want to play. I understand all that. But sometimes you have to protect people against themselves.
That's the coach's job. If you ask a warrior if they want to go do warrior stuff, they're going to say yes. That's why you have people that are supposed to be in charge of those that don't know well enough for themselves to tell themselves to sit down and chill out for a bit.
Well, look, so. I'm a highly paid athlete, Zay, but remember, I fractured my elbow and I was still out there playing pickleball. So I understand.
Hey, BK, I was about to say, that would be like you spraining an ankle and having a tournament tomorrow and not showing up with tape around half of your leg and still trying to play anyway.
I would absolutely be there, no questions asked.
I know, which is why Mahomes is going to play this week.
So all of you guys can disregard what I said. Mahomes should play.
Vikings 30, Chicago 12. What's the worst part of this Chicago mess at this point? Because, geez Louise, I don't know what the heck is going on right now with Chicago. They started out looking decent. They started out looking like they would be of the upper echelon of this division, and now they just look like Chicago. I'll say this. I don't think you could have asked much more from the GM as far as setting this team up for success. They have a good defense. They have several offensive pieces, more than they probably had in years. They get the guy that's supposed to be the, oh no, you can't pass up on Patrick Mahomes again. And they inadvertently passed up on, well, I can't call Jaden Daniels or Bo Nix Patrick Mahomes yet, or either one of them saying they're going to be that successful. But they, again, didn't get the right guy. Or maybe this is just a learning curve. Not all rookies go out there and excel in year one. We can't expect that from everyone. But I can say I don't know how much better you think your team is going to get anytime soon, unless they just do what Carolina did. Spend your whole offseason on offensive linemen. Take away the only excuse that's left, which is the offensive lineman. You have a year under your belt, so the timing should kind of slow down for you a little bit, and you have more people protecting you. After that, we have to start to consider that it may be you. But how do you fix this mess? Is it fixable?
So first, let's go back with the Bears, right? With their, they were 4-2. They lost that Hail Mary, the miracle at Landover that made them 4-3. Ever since that Hail Mary, they haven't won a game. They're 0 for their last 8. The Bears, I think, have scored once in the last 4 weeks in the first half. Caleb Williams has been absolutely wretched in the first half of games. Not that his games have been good in general, but he's been particularly terrible in the first half. Here's the thing. I think everyone in the organization is to blame. The GM screwed up by taking the wrong quarterback. You, myself, and Vander told everybody that would listen that Jaden Daniels was the guy, not Caleb Williams. I went on multiple diatribes and rants about why Williams wasn't the guy. It was obvious he wasn't the guy. All you had to do is watch the film and you knew he wasn't the guy. And yet they still took him. So the GM tried to surround him with pieces, parts at wide receiver and other things. But at the end of the day, he screwed up the draft by taking the wrong quarterback.
That's, I can't blame that part on him, though. Because he was newer at his job, I kind of feel like it wasn't his. I really don't feel like there was a decision to be made only for that position. So that's the only thing. He was in a tough position. I don't know, BK. Like that was a really tough position for him. And it could have gone, it still could go right. But what we see in Washington right now, with a guy who only has one wide receiver and not much else. And then we look at what's going on in the offensive lines, the grades on them are negligible as far as between Washington. Neither one has a great offensive line, to be sure. But a guy that has three wide receivers, a tight end, and a pass-catching running back can't come through in the clutch when it matters most. See, most people don't know that their stats are close enough that if the win-loss record was different, we wouldn't be talking about Caleb or the GM. Like, it's not the raw numbers. It's the, oh my God, how did you miss that guy? Like, that's what I see. The overthrows, the bad judgment when it matters the most. That's the biggest difference between Caleb Williams right now and looking at Jaden Daniels. It's the glaring difference in accuracy. And I'm talking like if the receiver laid out and ran 2 miles per hour faster, you would have still overthrown them type throws as far as Williams is concerned.
So I think you and I differ on this because I think maybe you were drinking some holiday cheer before the show, maybe, because, and I appreciate you drinking the Kool-Aid, but, you know, sorry to be Scrooge. Here's the thing. I'll even allow the argument you made about the quarterback part. I'll concede that for this part. The GM still allowed a coach who absolutely is incompetent to keep his job and didn't fire Eberflus before the year. Okay. He didn't have that decision, too.
Yeah. Never mind. Take back everything I just said. That's bad enough. That's okay.
Literally, you're right. Bring back Bozo the Clown to be the head coach again. Come on. I wouldn't let him coach my high school team. So, you know, at the end of the day, that was a mistake. As far as Caleb Williams, can he get it right? Here's my concerns. I'm going to repeat some same arguments, but it doesn't change. It's true. In college, when he played against better teams where there was equal talent, he didn't have a tremendous athletic advantage. The Buckeyes, they shut him down and made him run for his life. Notre Dame on the road made him run for his life, and he threw ungodly amount of turnovers, and they got spanked in South Bend, right? So in the bigger games, he played poorly. His stats at times may have been better in terms of yards and touchdowns, but he took sacks, he threw a lot of picks, he fumbled. He can't read defense as well. And the worst part is he's a terrible leader. People like Mahomes and Stroud came up to him after the game and said, hey, we're here to mentor you and help you out. And he said, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm content to suck. Like, literally, how can you play so bad every first half of every game and be like, yeah, no, I'm good? Like,
I'm not mad at that.
And here's the thing, and we talk about accountability, and this is a pet peeve of mine, whether it's what we do at work as leaders, whether it's pickleball, softball, sports, anything I've ever done. It can be relationships, it can be pickleball, it can be whatever. Accountability. It's a lot better message to stand in front of your team and say, you know what, guys? You know, I'm the face of the franchise. I was brought in to make things right. Our front office did everything they were supposed to do. I need to play better. I can't keep making these mistakes. I'll get it fixed. Our defense is too good for me to keep screwing up. If he were to say that, is that so much better than no, I'm good?
I think it was a little personal, though, with CJ. Okay, Patrick, that's different. CJ, you've been in the league for a year, and it ain't like you won a Super Bowl or nothing last year, so calm down. Like that was the CJ reaction. I'm not saying it was right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying that was the, like, okay, like, I don't, you're not my big brother. You're, like, less than a year older than me. Don't big bro me, dude. Like, that's what, but Patty's already in the Hall of Fame, and he ain't about to retire for 10 years. So that guy, you listen to that guy. That was the guy that you were supposed to be most like based on your improvisational skills, but you holding on to the ball for 35 seconds every time you hike the ball, and then you want to cry about the offensive. The offensive line is not supposed to be able to keep you safe but for about 7 seconds at the most, and you holding on to the ball for a half a minute. This is on you, my guy. One of the biggest differences between him and Daniels is accuracy, being able to get rid of the ball, and being able to feel the guys around you. It scares me every time he hikes the ball because it's like he's oblivious to the guys around him. And people are running out of being open and back into coverage by the time he decides to throw the ball, and then he throws it over everybody's head so it didn't even matter.
And to your point, you brought up a great point, because here's the thing. The elite NFL quarterbacks process information so much quicker. And I don't expect him to do that as a rookie. It takes time. I understand that. But the elite NFL quarterbacks get rid of the ball in under 2.3 seconds. He's well above 2.3, and it's because he doesn't know where to go to the ball. He's easily confused, and he's not processing the information quick enough. So you can't blame your line when you're trying to hold on the ball for 7 seconds and you're supposed to do it in a third of the time. Like, that's not a line problem. That's a you problem. Quarterbacks that get rid of the ball make their line look good, right? Quarterbacks that hold on to the ball make their line look bad. It's not the line's fault. I just think that it's accountability. It's maturity. It's saying, you know what? I got to be better. Whether he truly feels that he needs to get better isn't the point necessarily, although that'd be ideal. Perception is reality. The perception is he thinks he's great, and the game tape says otherwise, and so does their win-loss record.
The Eagles shellack Pittsburgh 27-13. Big day for the Eagles, or is Pittsburgh just not good enough to beat this team? Is there a talent disparity here, or was this just a dog having his day or any given Sunday type of a situation? What we got on this Battle of Pennsylvania?
So you see the smirk because, you know, I love being right. And I told you the Steelers were going to be in trouble. And one of the things that I said was the Eagles sleptwalk through the Panthers and played terrible at home because they were looking ahead, right? And you'd see a much closer game to how they played at Baltimore against the Steelers than you saw against the Panthers. They were up for this game. They dominated this game. And I think the Steelers have gotten exposed for exactly my concern of what I thought they were. They're well coached. Their special teams is great. Their defense is top five. Their offense is pedestrian. They had no Pickens. Their biggest playmaker wasn't there. And again, look, I'm not putting this all on Russ, but you're playing a top three defense in the Eagles. The Eagles are rolling right now. They're playing with a ton of confidence. And I'm telling you, this Eagles team is scary good. And the Steelers better be careful. because what seemed like a pretty sizable lead in the FC North, they got to go to Baltimore next week. And if they lose that, they're both 10-5 with two to go. You got to be really careful at Baltimore next week, because you think the Eagles were up for that game. The Ravens have payback in mind against the Steelers. I just think the Steelers are very limited offensively with what they can do. It's really hard for them to score points. They have to work so hard to generate offense. And it's against the better teams, the Lions, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Eagles. You're going to have a hard time scoring enough points to win. It's just not good enough, Zay.
And Dick is in play, so that didn't help at all.
No. No, it didn't help.
Let's move on over to college football. BK, we have a weekend coming up that is going to be one for the ages. We will have our first round of the playoffs. I kind of want to know who you got and why. We have four matchups here. First up, Clemson versus Texas. Who you got and why?
I think Texas needs to be very careful in this matchup, but I do like Texas to win. They have better coaching. They have home field advantage. They have the better offense, and they have the better defense. They should, across the board, they're the more talented team. I do think they'll win. I'm surprised the spread's 11. That seems like a big number.
You know, let me ask you this. Does that seem like a number that you want to hop on now before it changes, or do you think that that will remain the same?
I think it's going to plus or minus a half a point or so going to be the same, because if it was going to move, I think it would have already moved initially when it came out. I think the sharps in the public are pretty in line. We're comfortable with this number. The only thing that makes me nervous if I'm Texas is they really haven't looked great over the last 6 weeks, right? I've been telling you guys that Ewers has been battling something because he's been in and out of the lineup. He hasn't looked right. They've been able to win a lot of games in spite of that. But, I mean, hell, the only team to beat him is Georgia twice. So, you know, I mean, they're undefeated against everybody not named Georgia, and that's not, you know, any kind of embarrassing loss. The Dogs are tough. I just think that, you know, much like Clemson snuck up on SMU and really, really came out like gangbusters against SMU in the ACC title game, I just think it's important to Texas to get off to a good start so that Clemson loses some of that belief. Because the longer that team hangs around, the pressure is going to shift to Texas at home. And Clemson's a proven commodity. They've had a lot of success under Dabo, and Texas really hasn't had a lot of playoff success under Sark. Remember, the only playoff game they played, what happened? They lost. So, you know, I think Texas wins that game, but I do think it might be closer than the experts think.
Indy versus Notre Dame. I really believe this game is going to be, I'm going to put it out there, BK. I'm going to stand on business here. I think Indy is going to beat Notre Dame by double digits. I think that this is a matchup that doesn't bode well for Notre Dame. I think Indy is in a position where they still want to be able to prove a few things about themselves. I've been drinking the Indy Kool-Aid all year. And I didn't stop drinking it when Ohio State beat them. I have a good feeling about this matchup for Indy. They can do what they do and what Notre Dame has been suspect in stopping. I'll put it that way. What are your thoughts as far as this matchup is concerned?
It's not often you and I disagree, but I disagree. And here's why.
Okay.
I look at this different. And if it makes you feel any better, my brother agrees with you that he thinks that Notre Dame could have a hard time. And my brother definitely knows his stuff, so I take what he says seriously. But for me, I disagree with both of you in the sense that Notre Dame's at home. They're going to be up for this game. It's an in-state game. And the other part of it is, look at Indiana, right? They have 11 wins. Name one good team they beat. They had a cupcake Charmin soft schedule. The only two games they played against competent teams, Michigan gave them all they could handle without a competent college football offense. And they had a squeak by that game at home. And then they got pasted.
Michigan beat Ohio State, so say what you want about that.
But then they got pasted by the Buckeyes. I say that to say, look at how Notre Dame's played against these teams with gaudy records and no quality wins. Navy, what do they do to Navy?
Wait. Take a step back though, right quick, BK. Now, I know you can't do this, but I'm doing it, okay? They beat...
Can't wait for this.
Indy beat Michigan. Michigan beat Ohio State. Indy, I believe, was better than what they looked like showing up in that game against Ohio State. And the fact that a team that they beat clowned Ohio State, I believe, and again, that's the part that you can't do, but I'm doing it. I believe that Notre Dame is closer to a Michigan than they are to an Ohio State as far as what they do. So that's why I think it'll be easier for Indy to dealing with Notre Dame will be more like dealing with Michigan and trying not to make the same mistakes, so that way we make the win easier. That's the mind frame that I'm looking at as far as this matchup is concerned. Does that make sense?
I hear you. I don't agree.
Look, for no other reason for you guys to go check out the YouTube channel, it's for the look that BK just had on his face. He had the look on his face now. You're speaking and words are coming out of your mouth, but they're not making very much sense.
If I had it, that's what you would have gotten. Survey says no, but oh, Lord. So normally I keep my poker face, clearly not there. The looks told the whole story, but so I hear what you're saying, but you can't use a transitive property. You're right, it doesn't apply. If in sports, if A beats B and B beats C, that doesn't mean that A beats C. It doesn't work like that. So what I will say is it possible that Indiana could give them a good game for the reasons you mentioned? Yes, I do think it's possible. I think it's more unlikely. It's more likely, though, we have an experienced team in Notre Dame who's used to playing in big games, who's at home. They're going to have a tremendous home field advantage. Ever since their embarrassing loss against Northern Illinois, they've crushed every single team they played since then, including an undefeated Navy team at the time that had a gaudy record and then got spanked, and then an undefeated Army team and then got taken to the woodshed. So Indiana now has this gaudy record. They're coming to South Bend. And here's the part where I don't think people fully understand. Indiana deserves all the credit for the great season they've had. And they've had a great year. And they deserve to be in the playoff. But they don't have the talent on the field to match up against the athletes that Notre Dame's putting out there. Notre Dame has a top 8 roster. From a roster standpoint, Indiana probably has a top 50 roster. There's a big talent gap difference across the board, especially at the line of scrimmage. I don't know how they're going to be able to run the ball. I don't know how they're going to stop Notre Dame. I just think that it's possible they might hang around for a half. My suspicion is they're going to get worn down in the second half. Again, we all have opinions. Who knows how it'll go? We'll find out soon enough. But I just think we've seen this movie before.
SMU going up against Penn State. This one, I don't really care about this one for some reason. Like, I just, like the other three games, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to see it. Like, I don't know, like Macho Man Randy Savage. Oh, yeah, like just trying to, no. It's like, oh, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. No, absolutely not. No. It's like leftovers that weren't good the first time. No, I don't want it. Like, no. Penn State isn't all that great. SMU. I would have wanted to watch it had SMU beat Clemson, but they just – I got a sour taste in my mouth about SMU at this point. But as far as who I think will win, though, I think SMU may pull it up. I think they may grow from the loss that they had against Clemson and kind of be who we thought they were going to be. But yeah, I don't really care. I don't really care too much about this matchup at all. And honestly, and I don't know if I just talked myself out of it or not, but I think I'm actually going to go Penn State for this game. I can't get out of my just mentioning Clemson and seeing that in my head again, that you had to come back to still lose. I don't know. That may be a tall task to – isn't it going to be in Penn State, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, it'll be in Penn State.
Yeah, they don't – man, that's probably going to – that's definitely going to have to be a whiteout. I'm sure that's what they're going to do. I don't know. I think I'm going to roll with Penn State with this one. Never mind. I'm going to switch my vote now. So what do you got?
So I again disagree with you. I'm really looking forward to this game. And the reason why I'm looking forward to this game is because both teams have a lot to prove. In Penn State's case, you know, we bash Ryan Day, the Buckeyes, all the time for not beating top five teams and not winning any games of subsequence, right? Well, Franklin's the poorer version of Ryan Day because he's losing all these big games and losing to Ryan Day. So now 1-9, win 7 in a row. So I think for me, Franklin needs to show that this team can actually win a meaningful game. Can you win a postseason game at home against a team that you're supposed to beat? You're the favored team. You're at home. You have the better talent. This is a game you should win. As far as SMU, so I'm interested to see, can you prove, show me you belong. Show me this team is different. I'm curious to see if we'll see it. It's going to be cold. Who knows if it'll snow, but it's definitely going to be cold. You got a team from Dallas having to play in the cold again. We'll see how that, and then SMU. Look, I've been high on this team for 2 months, and for the first time, they disappointed me against Clemson. But although I do think that was more about Clemson just playing really well that day, then it was something bad about SMU. Sometimes you can lose and the other team just plays better. And I think while SMU made mistakes, clearly Clemson played very well. Mm-hmm. But in this case, SMU has a quality team. That team can score on anybody. They have weapons. They are never out of a game because of their offense. And their defense is just good enough that they can keep teams in, they can keep themselves in games while their offense figures it out. I'm really curious to see how this plays out because I do think it's going to be a sneaky good game.
All right, BK. Help me out, buddy. Ohio State versus Tennessee. I'm nervous, man. I'm nervous, and I'm also already hedging my bet. I'm nervous because Ryan Day makes me Ryan Day makes me nervous, and I'm not a player. I can only imagine, like, his demeanor just makes me nervous, and I feel like that's how the players play for the first half of almost every game. They just play nervous. And look. This is how I'm hedging my bet, BK. He gotta be going if we lose to Tennessee. Gotta be. But if he beats Tennessee and then possibly beats whoever comes up next after Tennessee, then maybe he does deserve to get another year as the head coach, which would be the most likely result. So, I'm hedging my bet that if we lose, awesome. We get a new coach. If we win, awesome. We still have a chance at a championship. What are we doing, BK? Help me out.
So I wish in my world we would either do one of two things. Because the last thing I want to do for 3 hours is watch Ryan Day coach with the most clenched butt cheeks in the history of coaching. So either they need to send him on a recruiting trip so that he's nowhere in the state for this game, or they just tape him or stuff him in a locker and lock him in there and don't let him come out until the game's over, so I can't watch him screw this game up. That being said, it's at home. They've had time to prepare. They are the more talented team. I do feel like Ohio State finds a way to win this game. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be easy. They're going to have to overcome the Vols and Ryan Day. So you're playing a lot of opponents here. But I do think the Buckeyes find a way to win this game and move on against the Ducks.
So what scares me is, all things being equal, I feel like Tennessee is a more talented team than Michigan. They're more battle-tested than Ohio State. I don't know, man. Like, I get why the players play the way they do under Ryan Day, because I can't even talk about the team without feeling nervous at this point. That was never the case under previous coaches. Every week that we went out there, it was like, oh, yeah, we're kicking behinds and taking names this week. But I don't like it.
Well, not to sound all pickleballish again, but I'm going to use something that I say both as a player and a coach, right? People reflect, players reflect their leadership. You have to play with confidence. You have to play with controlled aggression. You have to play intentional, be strategic, and play with a sense of purpose. Coach Day does not do a very good job of getting that message out there. I'm sure he tries. It's clearly a piss poor job. It's probably like a Caleb Williams type effort, but I need more of Mahomes type effort versus Caleb Williams effort with this delivery. I'll say this to say this. The problem I have with Tennessee is, if you take away their gaudy numbers in non-conference games against the directional scores, right? They really struggled to score against any conference team. And now you're having to play a road game in the cold in a hostile environment against what we know is a really good Buckeyes defense. We don't know what the offense is going to do, but I'm confident the defense is going to play really well, and we know it's going to be an absolute madhouse there. So those things will all play in Ohio State's favor. It's not going to be pretty, but I think at the end of the day, the Buckeyes win. It might only be by 7 or 10, might even be less than that. But I do think Ohio State squeaks by. And the question that I have for you is, if the Buckeyes do win and they get a rematch with the Ducks, and remember, they were beating the Ducks 20-22 in Eugene after 3. So the question is, how do you think they fare in the rematch with the Ducks in a game they know on the road they had a chance to win the game?
I think Ryan Day will figure out a way to screw it up. That's just where I am. That's the truth. That basically wraps it up. That wraps up my opinion of Ryan Day in a nutshell. Like, that game, he would be more of what he is because of the pop and circumstance surrounding it. And what he is isn't good enough. So that's where I am.
So I just want to go back to a couple things that you said. Well, one thing you said, and then ask a question. So you and I are in agreement that after last season, and probably you were a season ahead of me on that, after last season, I would have fired Coach Day. He wouldn't even have the season. Unless he wins a national championship this year, and make no mistake, they're not going to, he would get fired.
Well, see, the AD has already come out behind him. So I don't know if that's for the postseason and things can rapidly change or what, but the AD has already come out and said that Ryan Day will most likely keep his job this coming year.
I think it's easy for him to say in that moment, but imagine having to answer to that fan base again should there be a loss to Tennessee at home.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it's going to be easy to walk that back. So my question to you is, and I'm not going to let you say Chip Kelly. So outside of Chip Kelly, who's going to be the coach to replace Ryan Day if and when he gets fired?
I am going to, unfortunately, have to hedge another bet here. And I'm going to get the most honest answer that I can. Depends on who's available. I don't want a guy who just got fired from somewhere else. I want to steal a guy from somebody. I don't want the guy that couldn't do his job. I want to get a guy that's great at his job, and we got to pay extra money to be able to get him away from the team that has a lofty buyout clause. So it's all circumstance. Like, that's a very difficult question to answer because I literally don't know who would be available to us. But of the guys that are out there right now who are available, and this is not tongue in cheek, I would take Urban Meyer over him in a skinny New York second. If you're asking me right now who's currently available that I think would be able to do a better job in this day and age and in this situation, that guy got fired over some tattoos. We're handing out millions of dollars now. I think we'd be okay. He'd still be the head coach there now if not for some tattoos. That's kind of where we are. We probably have another championship as well by now, if not for some tattoos. So Terrell Pryor and the gang, you know, back in the day, they did a few things. They kind of got used to winning Big Ten titles. So they said, well, we got four of these. Here, you can have one. Give us some free tattoos. And that got everyone in an uproar because, you know, if it's Ohio State and they do it, and, you know, other people are getting, you know, houses, but God forbid tattoo. Tangent for another day. You can still see I'm a little bit, you know, a little sore about that. But Urban Meyer, I do know, is currently available, and he can coach, and he would get more out of that team. And the synergy between an Urban Meyer and a Chip Kelly, we may put up 80 and still go for two. That's the type of energy that you're going to have on that field with those two guys. So that's how I'm going to answer that question.
So I love the answer. I don't think that Mike Urban's coming back. So the answer I'm going to give is somebody that I've made quite a bit of money on this year, and a coach that, and a team that you hyped up and I disagreed with you. The guy that I would get is, I'd get Cignetti from Indiana to come here. It'd be a huge step up in a job. He's earned the right at a higher job. He openly tells you wins everywhere he goes. He's an aggressive guy who has the right mindset. He's a very confident person, which this team severely lacks in leadership. I would love to have him coach the Buckeyes. I think it's something he would do.
I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that. I wouldn't give you pushback on that. It's just a matter of whether or not he's going to be available. Maybe he has the quote-unquote perfect job in the back of his mind, and he knows that that guy will only be there one more year if things goes his way. And based on who he has in his pipeline, he should be able to produce similar or better results in Indy. So he's going to, you know, bide his time. But I wouldn't be mad at that at all, BK. But we shall see.
Go ahead. And the reason why I ask you, Bud, is this, right? Because something that I think all of you need to think about, it's easy, and this isn't directed at you, Zay, this is just a generalization. We need to be really careful about when we talk about coaches getting fired, because it's easy to fire. Forget the buyout part for a second, right? It's easy to fire a coach. But the question is, if you're going to make the move, you better get somebody better than what you have. And the answer, the question that I always have in situations is, just ask Auburn, who's going to literally be a revolving shitstorm of coaches over there. If you fire a coach, you better get somebody better than what you have. Who is that guy? If you can't find somebody better, then you can't make the move. Now, in this case, you did clearly name someone way better who's proven to be much better. And I named somebody who would be better. So there's a better option out there. I just caution that there's not, for every situation that's here.
You know what, BK? Matter of fact, I'll take Mike Vrabel. I take that guy over Ryan Day all day. Give me Mike Vrabel. Matter of fact, I take, what's my guy? The wide receiver coach used to play in the NFL for what is it? Why can't I remember his name right now? Help me out, BK.
I know who you're talking about, too. Hold on.
I cannot remember his name right now, but
oh, Brian Hartline.
Hartline, yeah. I'd give Hartline a shot if I can't say Chip Kelly. Hartline has shown the capability to put together one of the best wide receiving corps in college every year. I give that guy a shot possibly. But there's some other guys out there that if they know the job is available, will show themselves to be available. So, you know, in certain schools, you don't have to worry about whether or not there's going to be another guy that is capable to do the job, that's going to want the job. Some places, you got to make sure they're going to want you as much as you may want someone better, but does someone better want you? Ohio State won't have that issue. So, you know. And Ryan Day ain't it. I wouldn't care if we went through a bad coach in a couple subpar seasons to get rid of him to get to the good coach. Because the worst place to be is complacent and mediocre. And that's we're heading closer to that than we are a championship with Ryan Day. Humble opinion.
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on coaches these days because, you know, when there was a 4-team playoff, it's really hard to make 4 teams. Now that there's 12, it has that feeling perception-wise that
I don't want no excuses
that anybody can make the top 12. So there's no excuses. And it's interesting to me too about how narratives change, right? And I mean that in terms of coaching. Before the year, Shane Beamer here at Carolina was in trouble. And now after a 9-win year where they win 6 in a row and they finish in the top 15. The sky is blue and it looks great here, right? But that wasn't the case before the year. They were projected to have 5.5 wins for a reason. And then
he went from hot seat to SEC coach of the year.
And think about other guys, right? Like Arkansas, Hartman was in trouble, and then he brought in Bobby Petrino as coordinator, and all of a sudden Arkansas looks better. And you look at Vandy, Clark Lee was in trouble. And Vandy totally over exceeded expectations this year. So there's teams where you just, and even Florida, you know, Billy Napier was the punching bag for everybody. He had to go through multiple quarterbacks, but it looks like he found one. And this team played a lot better down the stretch where it's like, had we not started Graham Mertz, who's hot garbage, this team might have even been even better. So, you know, it's just interesting how the narrative can shift from outhouse to quasi penthouse in a short term.
They at least got an apartment with a lease. Like, but that pretty much wraps it up for us for today. Make sure you check out the show tomorrow and on Saturday. Or next week, we won't be on the air next week. We are going to take Christmas week off. We felt that Christmas Eve, Christmas, and the day after Christmas should be spent with the family. And those are the days we normally record. So with that being said, we will bring to you your normal shows for the week. And then we'll see you a week after next. But yeah, make sure you roll with us during the week and we will go from there. For this evening, that pretty much wraps it up. Remember, my good friends, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Happy holidays, y'all.
See y'all later.